Good afternoon. It's 4:30 and 75 degrees in Moorhead. This is Mountain Edition. I'm Leanne Akers.
And I am Logan Pemberton.
It would be rare for us to take on more than one or two very finite, very wrap your hands around, know what you're deciding sort of issues for a special.
A Northeast Kentucky lawmaker expects a special session date to be announced soon.
The case of a Pike County woman charged in a fatal hit and run will go to the grand jury.
The city of Ashland is delaying a planned ordinance that targets drug houses.
St. Clair Regional Medical Center is gearing up for its annual charity golf event.
Taxes in Mason County are expected to go down.
In sports, the Reds are looking for another win over the Mets tonight at the Great American Ballpark.
Bud Luke has the stock report.
Partly cloudy tonight with lows around 63 degrees. Stay tuned for an extended weather forecast after this news.
A Northeast Kentucky lawmaker remains confident that Governor Matt Bevin will call for a special session of the legislature. Jill York is a Republican state representative from Grayson. York expects the governor to announce soon his planned dates for a special session.
I know that that continues to develop, and while there's a whole lot swirling in kind of the rumor universe around Frankfort and throughout the Commonwealth, it looks like that we are most likely going to find ourselves perhaps sitting down in mid-October. That is where I would put my safest bet right now.
York feels certain that the legislature will deal with only one issue during the expected special session, either fixing Kentucky's financially embattled public pension system or reforming the state's tax code. The other matter will be saved for January when lawmakers gather for the 2018 regular session.
Kentucky's GOP House Speaker says the state's governor and others need to tone down the rhetoric used when debating the future of the state's troubled pension system. House Speaker Jeff Hoover says he was disappointed with the governor Matt Bevin's comments on teachers.
Honestly, I was disappointed in the governor's remarks with regard to sick days. His comment that teachers were hoarding sick days.
Hoover's wife is a longtime teacher. Bevin has said he will call a special session of the state legislature to address the state's pension system, which is facing a shortfall of at least $33 billion.
A second group of troops from the Kentucky National Guard are in Texas to help with rescue and restoration efforts. 41 soldiers from the 123rd Air Left Wing in Louisville are now in Texas on the heels of a group of 26 guardsmen who went there earlier this week. Lieutenant Colonel Steve Campbell says the team is ready for whatever they encounter.
We'll go down there, and if there's nothing, we can set up generators, we'll have power, we'll have our own water, our own food, our own fuel, all that to operate down there.
Not knowing what they may encounter or when they will return, they have packed enough supplies for weeks. Some of their work will be to evacuate people from hospitals and nursing homes.
Two Fleming County brothers facing hundreds of illegal hunting charges entered guilty pleas and agreed to pay more than $20,000 in fines, restitution, and court costs, serve time in home incarceration, and lose their hunting privileges for 3 years. 69-year-old Larry Fryman and his brother 63-year-old Danny Fryman entered guilty pleas on August 17th in Fleming District Court. Larry Fryman's convictions included 115 counts of illegally taking a deer or turkey and one count of terroristic threatening. Danny Fryman's convictions included 114 counts of illegally taking a deer or turkey. According to the Department of Fish and Wildlife, the cases began last November when conservation officers say they discovered Larry Fryman hunting illegally in Mason County. Investigators later discovered hundreds of illegal antler sets at the family's farm near Flemingsburg. The court ordered each brother to pay $10,000 in restitution and stripped them of their hunting privileges for 3 years.
A Pike County woman charged in a fatal hit-and-run went to court yesterday. WYMT reports 40-year-old Erica Wolford was arrested on Saturday after police say she hit and killed 27-year-old David Honecker on Kentucky 194 in Phelps. Police say she was driving under the influence at the time and immediately fled the scene. Assistant County Attorney Kyle Deskin says Wolford was charged and released for DUI earlier in the month.
The fact that she was released on an administrative release program without consulting the Commonwealth, without consulting the judge, it it makes you wonder whether or not something would have transpired differently and maybe we could have avoided this tragedy.
Pike County Judge Darrell Mullins described Wolford as a danger to the community. A grand jury is expected to meet today to decide if she will face felony charges of vehicular manslaughter or murder.
The city of Ashland is delaying a planned ordinance to target drug houses. MSPR's Kyle Blankenbuehler reports.
According to the Daily Independent, Ashland is seeking more community input on combating the local narcotics problem. Nearly a week ago, the city designed a statute aimed at curtailing drug crimes and prostitution. The proposed ordinance suggested labeling a property a public nuisance if it's used for two or more crimes related to prostitution or any illegal drug activity within 12 months. Anyone who owns, manages, or controls premises and either encourages or allows illegal activity would be notified. If the property owner didn't deal with the situation within 30 days, they could face fines between $250 and $500. City leaders have decided now to gather more input from the community on what it wants before they tackle the complex matter. The city hopes to survey its residents in an effort to work toward developing a consensus. Reporting from Ward State Public Radio News, I'm Kyle Blankenbuehler.
A softball coach has been charged after investigators say he had an inappropriate relationship with a minor. According to WSAZ, 37-year-old Joey M. Payne was indicted by a grand jury on August 22nd. His arraignment is scheduled for Friday at 11 a.m. in Boyd County. Payne lives in South Point and is charged with third-degree sodomy and first-degree sexual abuse. The victim's mother claims Payne reached out to her this past winter on Facebook and said he'd be willing to work with her daughter and improve her softball skills. Payne worked at a sports studio in Ashland, but a spokesman at that sports studio said Payne no longer is employed there. The mother says her daughter was 16 when the abuse began in the spring. She says her daughter claims Payne threatened to stop helping her with softball and prevent her from getting a college scholarship if she wouldn't participate in the inappropriate relationship. She says Payne had multiple inappropriate sexual contacts with her daughter from May to mid-June.
Like most jails in the area, the Carter County Detention Center is over capacity, holding 224 inmates. The issue is due in part to the temporary closing of the Boyd County facility following an inmate riot on August 19th. 10 maximum security inmates allegedly incited a riot, fought off two guards, then started a fire that severely damaged the inside of the jail and forced a widespread evacuation. Carter County jailer R.W. Boggs accepted 30 inmates immediately following the incident, but had them transported to Fayette County the following day.
So right now what we're getting is if someone's arrested in Carter County but only has Boyd County charges, obviously Boyd County can't take them. So I think we're up to only about five right now, Boyd Countyans, that we're just going to kind of be, for lack of a better word, stuck with until they get reopened.
Boggs anticipates the Body Count Detention Center will reopen in mid-September.
Enrollment this year at Maysville Community and Technical College is slightly less this year. Chief Operating Officer Russ Ward says the school's campuses in Maysville, Moorhead, Mount Sterling, and Cynthiana again have around 2,800 students, down 20 from 2016. Ward believes an improved local economy has created that situation.
Yeah, typically with our technical programs, we'll see a kind of a downturn in numbers of students when the economy picks up and people go back to work. But in the same sense, then on the gen ed side, it usually picks up a little bit. Liberal arts, science programs kind of pick up, but technical programs seem to always take a little bit of a dip.
Enrollment on MCTC's Rowan campus is also down slightly this year, but it still has nearly 900 students. The facility is expected to begin moving into its new $28 million building in the MMRC Industrial Park in December.
According to a new report, the 2008 recession caused the largest cuts to Kentucky's higher education funding. According to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, funding per student is down 26.4%, which is much higher than the national average of 16%. Cuts to funding have directly affected students like Ian Cruikshank, a sophomore of Eastern Kentucky University.
This past summer, I had to come up with $4,000 just to be able to come back. So I had to work all summer, and I still actually couldn't afford it. So I had to borrow a lot of money from my parents. And then this upcoming semester, it actually has raised. So instead of paying $4,000, I have to pay $9,000 directly out of my pocket.
Kentucky was one of just 13 states to cut education funding this past year. Tuition also continues to rise in every state, with Kentucky's average tuition increasing by 37%, close to the national average.
The Montgomery County Library will remain closed until the opening of its new facility next month. The new library is more than double the size of the original facility, sitting at 18,000 square feet. This will allow for more parking and better opportunities for family events. Library Director Melissa Barnes says the new facility will provide many new features.
The new building will feature, a community space that the community can actually check out and use for their meetings, public organizations. In addition, we'll have a separate learning lab. And then some of the other cool features, the new building has a drive-up window. So anybody that has a disability and they can't get in and out of their vehicle or whatever, they can actually reserve their books ahead of time and pick them up at the drive-thru window.
Barnes also says the children's area will be much bigger and the library will be able to provide additional security that it previously did not have. The new facility will open September 21st.
Moorhead St. Clair Regional Medical Center is getting ready for its major fall fundraising event. SCR Foundation Executive Director Tom Lewis says the hospital's 23rd annual charity golf outing will be held a week from tomorrow at the Eagle Trace course.
We do award trophies to our winning teams, but try to make it more about the fun and not so much about the competitiveness and people feeling like they have to be super serious about their golf. It's more about coming out for a great cause and having a great day. So that's always our goal.
According to Lewis, SCR's charity golf tournament generally raises between $80,000 and $125,000 in cash and in-kind contributions. He says the money raised during the event is used to help offset the thousands of dollars the hospital spends to provide care for patients without insurance or who can't afford to pay for the medical services that they receive.
Ashland's mayor discussed the growth of the city and the new TIF program with the Ashland Rotary Club on Monday. Here's WMKY's Brian Courtney.
According to the Daily Independent, Mayor Steve Gilmore discussed the establishment of a tax increment financing program known as TIF in Ashland. Gilmore and the Community and Economic Development Director, Chris Pullum, explained the program would increase city and county tax revenue with a new mapped-out district called the Ashland Plaza Development Area. Reconstruction for the area includes converting the Ashland Plaza Hotel into a full-service Delta Hotel and tearing down the Ashland Oil headquarters to build a new public parking garage and convention center. Pullum believes the new facilities will attract more investors. Gilmore also discussed Brady Industries' impending $1.3 billion aluminum rolling mill in South Shore, which he expects to create potential business growth for Ashland and its surrounding areas. The mill will create 550 manufacturing jobs with average salaries of $70,000 and is set to open in 2020. For WMKY, I'm Brian Courtney.
Taking a look at the weather tonight, partly cloudy, low to 63 degrees Fahrenheit, winds light and variable. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy skies with a high of 81. Tomorrow night, cloudy with occasional rain after midnight. Low, 61 degrees, chance of rain at 100%, and rainfall around a quarter of an inch. It is currently 81 degrees in Lexington and Inez, 80 degrees in Moorhead and Winchester, 82 degrees in Ashland, and 78 degrees in Flemingsburg.
On our feature segment today, we have Neighbors, Adrian Swain's conversations with our diverse Appalachian community. This afternoon, we hear the first part of his conversation with Elena Volovich, who was born in Tajikistan. Today, she discusses her childhood as a member of the Russian ethnic minority in the former Soviet state and describes how she first came to America as a high school student.
My name is Elena Volovich. I was born in 1986. I was born in Tajikistan.
A part of the Soviet Union.
Correct.
But your parents were not native Tajiks?
Right. My grandparents came to Tajikistan during World War II. One side of the family was fleeing persecution from communism. Another side was actually on an assignment by the Communist Party to build a country because it didn't have any infrastructure at that point. Growing up as an ethnic minority was challenging. When I was 6 years old, the Soviet Union collapsed, and That's when the native Tajik people decided now is the time for vengeance for all the wrongs that Russians have done. And I didn't cause any of those wrongs. My parents didn't. My grandparents were never in the position of authority, so I felt like I didn't deserve all that hate that was directed towards me and my family. There was a lucrative business of forcing Russians to leave the country so that their property would be transferred by the government to Tajiks, and the government was in on it, the government was encouraging it. Growing up, I had to run for my life many times. I heard, you Russians go back to Russia, things like that, so I learned to keep my head down most of the time and never make myself any different as much as I could. In Tajikistan, women are, for the most part, a property of the man. And I was raised differently. I was raised to pursue school, to pursue sports, to pursue all those things that Tajik women did not get to pursue. And I guess it was just written on my face, you know, I'm a free spirit deep inside. As much as I can try to hide it, it would still be obvious.
Your mother was a school teacher?
She was a teacher of Russian literature for a while. And then she began to work at the city council, so she was an elected official. She had a very nationalistic boss, a Tajik man, and he just made her job so difficult that she found it easier to quit than to continue working there. And a few years later, he orchestrated to seize the apartment that she owned. So we lost our house as a vengeance against her, so that's what he did. We rented apartments. I remember one of my mother's friends owned a bar, and he had an extra pub table, so that was our dinner table for a while. And then I used to do my homework on the ironing board for many years. So things like that happened.
After independence,
civil war broke out between radical Muslims and the government. And eventually the government won, but it doesn't mean it was a good thing. And during that time, it wasn't very safe to travel to other cities, so I found it safer to stay in my little county and just read books. And one of them was an English textbook, and I asked my mom to send me up for English lessons, which turned out to be my ticket to freedom later on. Yes, so when I was 15, my next-door neighbor came in and showed me an ad for a scholarship through the U.S. Department of State. Senator Bill Bradley from New Jersey originated it, and the goal of the scholarship was to bring kids from the former Soviet Union to America so that they would experience democracy firsthand and bring that knowledge back to their home countries and hopefully build democracies there. And I applied, and I didn't get in because my English wasn't good enough, but I saw it as an opportunity to further my education and to find freedom. And I knew I had another chance. I could apply again when I was 16. So I spent the entire year studying for that one test. And when the time came, I passed. I came to a small town in western Kentucky, and I was placed with an American family. I attended an American high school, and that was a cultural shock.
Next Wednesday, Volovich will discuss her first impressions of the United States. It's 4:48 and 80 degrees in Moorhead. I'm Leanne Akers, here with Logan Pemberton, and we are glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. Braxton Howard has sports in 30 seconds.
Support for MSPR comes from the Kentucky Folk Arts Center, presenting selected works by Bruce New, The Night is Only a Dream. On display through September 16th, the exhibition features more than 60 collages, drawings, and paintings by the Somerset artist. Open Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., the Kentucky Folk Arts Center is a cultural, educational, and economic development service of Moorhead State University. Located on First Street, adjacent to the Moorhead Conference Center, visitors and tour groups are welcome. More information available by calling 606-783-2204.
Good afternoon with Moorhead State Public Radio Sports. I'm Braxton Howard. The Cincinnati Reds host Game 2 of their three-game set with the New York Mets tonight at 7:10. The Redlegs snapped a 14-game losing streak against the New Yorkers last night with a 14-4 rout of their guest. Scott Schebler's grand slam was the big blow for the winners. Afterwards, Schebler told Fox Sports Ohio that it was nice to finally beat the Mets.
Yeah, Skip kind of told us. He's like, hey, let's go out and get one against these guys. They kind of owned us. So, you know, put a little extra pep in our step. So, yeah, it was good to come out here and get a good win.
Homer Bailey takes the ball for the Reds in an effort to improve on his 4-6 record. 2-9 Rafael Montero will pitch for New York. Some scores from around the MLB this afternoon. Atlanta beat Philly 9-1. Cleveland topped the Yankees 2-1. The Brewers lead the Cardinals 6-5 in the 8th inning. Seattle leads Baltimore 6-5 as well. That one is in the 5th. Detroit is up on Colorado 2-0 in the 4th. And Miami and Washington are scoreless through 2 innings. Morehead State football coach Rob Tenure says he'll be closely watching his reconstructed defense in the Eagles season opener against Kentucky Christian tomorrow night. Tenure and defensive coordinator Zach Moore simplified MSU's scheme in the offseason, also promising that the group will play more aggressive this year. According to Tenure, he wants the Eagles defenders to force the issue and make big plays against KCU.
We've got to make plays behind the line of scrimmage. We've got to sack the quarterback. We've got to intercept passes. And I want to see us playing on our toes. I want to see us playing an aggressive brand of football and playing harder than who we're playing against.
The Eagles game with KCU will kick off tomorrow at 6 o'clock at Jane Stadium. The University of Kentucky football team plays its first game on Saturday at Southern Mississippi. The Golden Eagles stunned Kentucky last year in last year's season opener, walking out of Commonwealth Stadium with a 44-35 win. Even though this year's opener is in Hattiesburg, head coach Mark Stoops expects a much different outcome.
I'm actually excited in a way because it's an away game. Our players maybe will keep our poise and our composure a little more because we came out of the blocks last year all fired up. And then we were so excited, you know what I mean? They didn't have the juice to finish the game. That first game, you get so emotional. So we talked about that. You know, emotion is fine, but use that during the week to prepare to be locked in.
That Stoops on Kentucky Sports Radio. Saturday's game kicks off at 4 p.m. Former NFL center Ed Cunningham, who has covered football for ESPN and ABC for almost 20 years, resigned earlier today. Cunningham told the New York Times that he is resigning from his role as ESPN's college football analyst due to his growing discomfort about the number of head injuries in the sport and that he cannot, in good conscience, continue to support and make a living off of football. The Round County football team is gearing up to face Mason County on Friday. After last week's 30-20 loss at Bath County, Coach Kelly Ford says it would be big for his young and rebuilding Vikings to knock off the Royals.
It would mean, I mean, awesome for those guys to get this win. It will get their confidence back. And all those kids was hurting Friday. I mean, they felt that we was the better team, that we just didn't put it together to finish the game.
Like Round, Mason is 1-1 this season. The Royals lost to rival Fleming County 18-14 last Friday. Several high school football games in the area will not be played on Friday night due to expected weather. The following games will now be played tomorrow. George Washington at Ashland, Bath County at Powell County, East Carter at Betsy Lane, Fairview at Nicholas County, Greenup County at Fleming County, and Raceland at West Carter. Morgan County at Jenkins has been moved to Saturday at 2 p.m., As of now, Round County will still host Mason County Friday night at 7:30 at Morehead State's Jane Stadium. The University of Kentucky is helping with relief for Hurricane Harvey victims. WMKY's Greg Jenkins has more.
Kentucky basketball coach John Calipari announced Tuesday night on Twitter that UK will help host a disaster relief telethon on Sunday to raise money for the victims of the storm. Sunday's telethon, called Teaming Up for Texas, will air live from 3:30 to 6:30 p.m. on WKYT. Tuesday, Kentucky sent several shirts and shoes to the University of Houston basketball program as part of the relief effort. Last Friday, as part of UK's alumni game, Calipari donated $150,000 to the Red Cross for relief. Calipari has hosted two disaster relief telethons during his time at Kentucky, one after the deadly earthquake in Haiti in 2010, and another in 2012 following Hurricane Sandy. Both of those telethons raised $1 million. For WMKY Sports, I'm Greg Jenkins.
One other note from college basketball, coaching legend Raleigh Massimino, who coached Villanova to the 1985 National Championship and won over 800 games in his career, has died at the age of 82. Finally, in sports, the Morehead State volleyball team dropped a three-set match at home last night to Marshall. The Thundering Herd overcame the Eagles 25-21, 25-22, and 25-14. MSU coach Jamie Gordon says his team didn't defend and didn't execute well enough on offense.
I think we left some points out there and some swings, to earn a couple of, maybe steal even a couple of points in those long rallies in the first two sets that, you know, then maybe could have put us over.
Now 2-2 this season, the MSU volleyball team faces Savannah State Friday at 3 p.m. as part of the Colonial Classic in Virginia. That's sports for Morehead State Public Radio. I'm Braxton Howard.
Support for MSPR comes from MSU Athletics, online at msueagles.com. Eagle football opens their schedule tomorrow night, hosting Kentucky Christian. Tip-off at Jane Stadium is 6 p.m. Tickets and more information from the MSU Eagle ticket office at 783-2386 or online at msueagles.com.
Good afternoon from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons. This is Bud Luke with your closing financial markets report for WMKY. U.S. stocks rose as the technology sector climbed higher, and at the close, the Dow did notch a gain of 27.06, finishing at 21,892.43. The S&P 500 was up in a more marked fashion, as it was up 11.29 at 2457.59. Because of the effect of technology stocks, and the NASDAQ Composite was the best performer of the three major indices as it notched a gain of 1% or 66.42, finishing at 6368.31. New York Stock Exchange breadth was roughly 9-5 in favor of winning stocks over losers. And as mentioned, the tech-heavy NASDAQ led all major indices and has now notched a three-day winning streak, lifting the index higher today were shares of Netflix, which advanced more than 3% after analysts at Bernstein said that Disney pulling its content from the platform would not hinder Netflix's future stock performance. And also shares of Apple contributed to the NASDAQ gains, rising 0.2% to hit a record high earlier today. Other major stocks in the sector rose, including Facebook and Google parent Alphabet. And, of course, tech is by far the best performing sector this year, advancing more than 20%. In economic news, the ADP National Employment Report showed private sector jobs increased by 237,000 for this month, and this was well above the expected 185,000. The ADP report is often used by traders as a preview to the government's monthly jobs report, which is set for release this Friday. Meanwhile, the second estimate for gross domestic product, or GDP, in the second quarter showed the U.S. economy grew by 3%, and this was more than an expected increase of 2.7%. As a result of these stronger-than-expected reports, market expectations for a rate hike from the Fed in December are now at 41%, and this is up from 34% yesterday. The two-year note yield, which is the most sensitive to changes in Fed monetary policy, climbed higher, finishing at 1.33%, and overseas stocks rebounded, with the Stock 600 index in Europe advancing 0.8%. In Asia, the Japanese Nikkei 225 rose 0.7%, while the Hang Seng index in Hong Kong popped 1.2%. And, of course, overseas stocks had been under pressure because of the Korean missile launch earlier in the week. In the commodities markets, oil was down 1%, finishing at $45.97, and gold was down 0.4% at $1,313.20 an ounce. Among Dow industrial stocks, the best performers were Cisco and Caterpillar, while your worst performers were Travelers and Johnson & Johnson. In the S&P 500, the best performers were Insight and Gilead Sciences, and the worst performers were H&R Block and Freeport-McMoRan. Turning now to stocks of local interest, it was Ashland Global up 12 cents at 60.77, AEP down 17 cents at 73.77, AK Steel up 27 cents at 5.77, Marathon Petroleum up 90 cents at 52.33, CSX up 63 cents at 50.41, and Community Trust Bank was up 50 cents to finish at 42.25. Reporting for MSU Public Radio, this is Bud Luke from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons.
That's it for Mountain Edition. This afternoon, we had help from Chuck Moraz, Arlo Barnett, Sean Delaney, Braxton Howard, Kyle Blankenbuehler, Logan Pemberton, Jacob Lindberg, Cody Robinson, and Brian Courtney. With our feature segment this afternoon, Morehead's own Adrian Swain. This is Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY Morehead, and translator W202BH in Inez. Our show is archived daily on the web at WMKY.org. For Logan Pemberton and all of the MSPR News team, I'm Leanne Akers for WMKY News. All Things Considered is coming up next. It's 5 o'clock.